Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Defining Time Show on Fifth Wrist Radio, and thank you for tuning in. Fifth Wrist is a place where enthusiasts can explore, share, and learn together in this great hobby that we all love. So my name's Anthony, and today I'm joined by Roman from Times Roman AU and the Independent Thinking Show. How are you going, Roman?
Very well, Anthony. Welcome Pleasure back. To be here. Thank you.
I tell you what, we're a bit of a dynamic duo these days. It's good fun.
Oh, you know, keeping an eye on the industry, keeping the bastards honest. That's us.
we just finished talking about all the major headlines of the week, and it sounds like there's probably a podcast in there, but we're not going to bore people with the new thing coming from Tudor and Messina and Ming going rogue. But anyway, we'll keep that for another time, hey?
Yeah. We don't know that the new release from Tudor will be boring, or we're assuming it will be. I mean, we're, you know, pretty good money on it, but we don't know. So yeah, let's leave it for next week. You're right.
Oh dear. All right. So we have a guest with us on the show today. And if we cast our minds back to July 2020, COVID was just
looming,
ramping up, blossoming. That's a great word. Across the globe, and we talked to a gentleman who's probably, I could almost say, Insta-famous, I think. So we're going to welcome back Pedro from Detroit Watch Guy. Welcome back. How are you going?
Hey, guys. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me one more time.
I hope it's not the last. I enjoy. Actually, I went back and listened again to your podcast last week, and I think that when you talked about your spreadsheets, and we will cover off on that a bit later, but I think it was so true, and it would have resonated with a lot of people about the hard work that goes into collecting and aiming for something, and then the discipline week by week to achieve those goals. So it was a nice thing to go back and listen to. So welcome back. We'll do wrist checks and drink checks. We will do the rapid questions because they weren't around when Pedro was on. He's old school, so you know, you've got to bring him into
analog.
The new world now.
That's right. He's analog style. That's right.
And after that, we'll do a bit of a check-in with Pedro, see what's been happening for nearly the last 12 months, last 10 months, get some updates on his collection, etc. And then today's topic of discussion is something that I've actually wanted to do for a little while, and we've kind of touched on it here and there, but we're going to dive a bit deeper into it. So hopefully for people interested in watches that use the Unitas 6498 or 6497, whatever variants you want, we're going to have a discussion about them, you know, a little bit on the history, who uses them, different clones out in the world and things like that. So strap in, it's going to be a bit of fun, but let's get started with Pedro's wrist check and drink check. What's happening on the other side of the globe for you?
Awesome. So here in Detroit right now, my wrist check, I'm wearing the star of my collection, which is the Grunfeld Principia.
Nice.
Freaking love this watch, and awesome. It's just a fitting watch for a Friday and kick off the weekend.
Have you got it strapped with the dial side up or the movement side up today?
You know me so well, man. The movement side up. That's the way to go.
Who needs to read the time when we've got iPhones, eh?
Correct.
I'm in front of my computer, so I don't need to read the time. I just want to see the beautiful movement.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And are you drinking anything in particular?
Of course I am, yeah. So the last time I was in the show, I was drinking gin and tonic, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I decided to change a little bit today. So I'm drinking a Cabernet Sauvignon from California called Carnivore. Very oaky, coffee tastes. Really, really good wine.
Beautiful. So Cab Savs, that's a red. I'm not too good with my...
Yep. In a bottle. Comes in a glass bottle.
Wine. Not a cask, not one of those.
No, not a good.
Sacks.
Actually, in a decanter right now, but yeah, came in a bottle.
Nice. Awesome. Well, yeah, the Grunfeld is just such a beautiful watch, and it's really cool seeing there's quite a number of people particularly in the States that have just fallen in love with them, and it's great seeing them on the wrist. It's such a cool piece. Yeah. Roman, what about you?
Well, I'll do my drink check, but you know, it's going to be hard to follow a guy with wine in a decanter. So I'll go with it's 11 o'clock in the morning. So it's heading towards lunchtime. So I've got my Saturday morning Bloody Mary, freshly decanted tomato juice, dash of Tabasco and Worcestershire sauce, you know, the proper style. Good vodka. Wow. So that's me. Too early for a gin and tonic. Yeah, too early for a gin and tonic, but nice on a Saturday morning.
Very good.
In terms of a wrist check, I've got a Garrick Norfolk. So Garrick's an English brand, and I'm sure we'll circle back and talk about this watch. The episode topic that we've got on. But that's me, White Dial Garrick Norfolk.
Very cool. In such an interesting handset, very English. But they're so pronounced. What are they? Oh, I know we'll probably talk about it later, but I see them as sort of like a hammerhead or hammer hands.
I think they call them anchor.
Anchor. Okay.
At least that's how somebody described it to me, but they possibly were talking about me and were just rhyming, slanging it.
Yes. All right. For me, thanks, Roman. I have something all the way from Guatemala, from the coffee bean fields in the middle of the mountains somewhere up there. But no, it's just a black coffee. I'm sorry. I cannot drink in the mornings.
I thought you were going luwak or something, digested beans, you know, the hand collected.
Oh, yeah, the bat-sifted. The ones that bats poo out.
Yeah, that's right. Hand-sifted. Awesome. Guatemalan, best. Creamy.
Very good. Now, on my wrist is, I've been wearing it a little bit this week, and it's my H. Moser & C. Pioneer Center Seconds with the Midnight Blue Fume Dial. And as I bought this Erica's original MN strap. It's the Trident with the white line and white stitching. And far out, it is comfortable and it really, really suits the watch. I'm like really happy with how it has turned out. And as a friend on Instagram, time_chapter, put it perfectly yesterday, he called it relaxed posh. And I kind of like that. I think that's it's a nice way. You know, people sometimes go a bit crazy when you have a really nice watch and you put it on a NATO or a MN or, you know, Perlin strap or whatever. I think it works and it's super comfy, and particularly the weight. I think I can really appreciate how the balance of the weight in this watch is when it's on a lighter strap than the rubber, because it just sits so well. So really, really happy with that.
It looks great. What
did you think of the MN on the Moser?
I think, you know, that's not particularly necessarily my favorite combination. But what I was going to say is that I like, because you change your straps quite a lot and I never do. So I actually really like what you've done with the Moser, because you've sort of had it on everything. And it just highlights how versatile that watch is. Because, you know, if you only see it on a rubber strap, you're like, oh, that's definitely a sporty watch. But then you've had it like a nice leather strap and you've had it on the NATO. Like it's like a tribute to the watch design and kind of your creativity, I guess. So I've enjoyed watching you, you know, you put different straps on it. It's cool. Thanks, it's a brilliant watch. Brilliant watch. Absolutely. Does really well on different straps.
Yeah, it looks phenomenal and probably wears super comfortable.
Oh, it's unbelievably comfortable. And I think, so Roman, I was thinking about it yesterday, just thinking to myself, I was looking at my collection and going, you know, which watch in here is the most versatile that looks the best on just about everything? And the Stover is up there. The Habering does a really good job, but I've come to the conclusion now after this strap and, you know, you've just listed off all the stuff I've done with it. This watch is unbelievably versatile, and it actually fits better on the wrist on this than on the rubber, just the way that the architecture of the actual strap works. But anyway, I'm off track. Cool. I'm in love with this watch. Such a cool piece. Righto, let's get into some rapid questions, and then we'll catch up with Pedro. So, Pedro, are you ready?
I guess.
That's all the spirit. Right.
Let's go. Rolex or Omega?
Rolex.
Yes. Vintage or modern?
Modern.
Oh. Mainstream or indie?
Indie.
Yes. Flip or keep?
Keep.
Keep. And a few watches or a lot of watches?
I wish I could say a lot, but has to be a few.
A few. But a few really nice ones, I think, in your case.
Hopefully,
which
yes.
Which is great. Cool. So have you always been a Rolex fanboy versus the Omega camp?
You know, Rolex has always been a very appealing brand to me. having a market.
Roman as well.
Yeah.
Oh, big fan from way back. From way back.
I had an Omega before, but I just prefer Rolex. That's all.
Yeah. I'm the same. I've got a vintage Omega, which was a family piece, that beautiful sort of solid gold with those really intricate bracelets from the 70s. I should put some more pictures up because it is a stunning watch, but that's more family sentimental than anything. But yeah, I mean, I was a fan of the Railmaster, the Trilogy one, the 57, but there's just not much in the Omega space that just speaks to me as opposed to the Rolex. So yeah, it's interesting. Some people are either both or just really swung one way than the other. But anyway, all right. So let's check in with you, Pedro. I did want to ask, so it's been 10 months since we spoke last, or probably 11. It probably took me 4 weeks to edit it. You know, how's your collection? What's new since you came onto the podcast last time?
Oh, man, a lot. I would say a lot has changed, and at the same time, not very much has changed. I had some shifts in my bigger pieces, or my big piece, because of a whole bunch of different circumstances. So, and I think this is a first. Nobody actually knows that, but I ended up getting rid of my F. Bjorn.
Yeah.
Is a very a shame to tell, and I felt really bad when I had to do, but I with all the circumstance, with everything that was going on, we were supposed to move to Europe, actually, with my company. Wow. Yeah, it was supposed to be roughly October, November of 2020, of last year. Mm. And, you know, we had my wife ended up leaving the job because we're about to move and everything. And then all of a sudden, you know, the like Roman said, COVID blossomed like crazy. And it fucked up all the plans, to be honest with you. So I was in a tough spot, and I had to make a decision, and the best way to drastically, you know, try to avoid the drastic collection change, I had to let go of the Jorn, which was a pity, and unfortunately, but at the end of the day, it all worked out because I was able to later on get the Grunfeld, which I freaking adore, and I consider as a good experience, you know. If I had a good experience of Bjorn, it's almost impossible now to get one, which is kind of sad. But I am happy where I am. We, you know, overcame almost everything. We're still here, healthy. We're working, expecting. So there's only great things to keep track of, you know. But basically, my Jorn is gone. Principe was in, and then I got the Ophion 786 Velos.
Cool.
Yeah, great, cool.
I love that watch. It's a beautiful watch for that price point. It's unbeatable. I also was lucky enough to be able to get the Rolex Oyster Perpetual 41 Green Dial. That it's my it's for my son. It's will be an heirloom piece for him.
Cool. So
the idea is really to get a nice vintage port wine, let it get old with him, and when he turns 21, we're going to crack open the bottle, and I'm going to hand it over to him, the Oyster Perpetual, as long as he is a good human.
That's what we all hope for our kids, isn't it? That's all you hope. Yeah. Absolutely, happy and a good human. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah, basically, this was it. I had a few small incomings. I had the Haim Watch Co. from Chicago. He's a brother of mine. Really great guy. I got the H's in the meantime. I got the Landray, which is the Tourbillon.
Yeah.
I think this is what I've got.
Had the Ming? Did you already have the Ming before that?
I think so, yeah. I think I had the Ming before that, right?
Yeah. Well, I think just quickly, because I think, you know, first of all, you know, it's always hard hearing these stories, and there's lots of them out there. But I think it shows to the way that we collect sometimes is quite interesting, that we really love these pieces, but under no circumstances does family or anything sort of come in between it. And you while you don't like letting go of watches, it's never even a really, it's not a hard decision. It's just the kind of thing that you'll do just to, you know, whatever it is you need to do, make ends meet or get yourself out of a hard situation. It's just, it's fascinating that no matter how much we love them, it's just so easy to make that decision, let it go, and then, you know, maybe buy it back later. Maybe not in this case, but
Absolutely,
it's credible.
You know, we get too caught up in, you know, the materialistic things. And sometimes it's good to put a perspective. So to me, this whole COVID thing, you know, this everything that happened was great for my person, you know, and even for my career, to be honest, because you start to put things in better perspective and what is really important to you. You know, I love watches. I always have watches. I always have a collection. But, you know, when put comes to shove, what going to do? Are you going to use your emergency fund, your savings to do something and then having like a huge amount of dollars parked in watches and put your family in jeopardy? You know, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, you got to be a little responsible sometimes.
And, damn being adults.
Exactly. And that's pretty much what I've done. And, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, you know, I still feel great. I mean, it was a great watch. I hate to let go of watches, especially, you know, grail pieces. But, you know, things that you have to do, and it's just, at the end of the day, just money. You can accomplish them later on, you know, at some point, maybe. I mean, at some point, I'm sure I'm going to have another Jorn. It might be another Sovereign. It might be something else. I don't know. But I think it's, you have to let go of things, you know, and just move forward. You know, that's my biggest takeaway. And as long as everything else is okay, everything else is just simple things, you know?
Yeah. Maybe we'll just do a quick update on all of us now that we've heard Pedro. So Roman, you sort of let go of a few pieces recently and you're sort of reshuffling your collection. So what's happening? Can you share anything? What's going on there with your collection?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll just sort of make a comment about Pedro as well. I mean, I've heard of a few people who have had to let watches go or actually chose to let Jorns and their 5711s go as prices went up because they sort of went like, well, I either need the money or, you know, for what I can sell my 5711 for, I can convert that into a, you know, a watch that I've really wanted, but I could never afford. Like it's been a really interesting sort of thing. But I'm kind of with you, Pedro, as well. I've sold a few watches through, I'm kind of trying to streamline the collection. And yeah, I sort of realized I had too many where, you know, I sell them and then I forget to think about them. And then, you know, I'll remember like a month later, oh yeah, I sold that. It kind of, you know, kind of liberating in some ways, you know, I've experienced it. It's off on in a new home sort of thing. So,
And then just a quick update on me. So for those that have been listening to the podcast for a while, I made the decision this year with lots of things going on in my life, new job, building a house, baby on the way, all sorts of studying as well. I just thought to myself, where does my focus need to be? I love the podcast and that sort of does take up some time. But the researching of and the sort of the hunting of new watches used to just take up endless hours every week. So I made the decision this year to not buy any watches at all. And that includes the awesome G-Shock, the transparent one that I really want, that was on sale for $197 last week and now they're not on sale anymore. And I thought, you know what? Nah, I just don't need any new watches. So I've been fortunate enough this year, I don't have to sell anything yet. But who knows what's going to happen in the future. But I've actually been okay with it. Like I've enjoyed just focusing on the podcast and the guests and my studies and my new job and all that kind of stuff and not really thinking about what I want next and just enjoying my collection. It's been a lot of fun and you know, I'm nearly halfway through. I've got 1 month to go and it will be 6 months and then another 6 months to go. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes, but so far it's not going too bad.
Yeah, I admire your fortitude. I can't do that. So I was going to say, are you going to buy a watch to celebrate the 6 month of not buying a watch? Is that
no?
That'd be kind of funny.
No. But I have bought a few straps, and I haven't. I don't
you
think
scratched
I've said,
that itch. Yeah, okay.
A few people may know this, but not many. But my Oxen Junior is back in Switzerland having a makeover.
Yeah.
So, you know, there'll be a few subtle changes and I have bought a few straps to enjoy the transition of changing watches. And that sort of keeps the new the NWA alive, I suppose, because, you know, this week especially with the Erica's original, it's been fantastic. So, yeah, but it's just I thought we'd just quickly check in there.
Sure.
But we'll keep going with Pedro, and I wanted
just
to know.
A little note.
Yeah, please.
Just thinking of you when you wake up early in the morning, you probably go in front of a mirror and say, "Hi, my name is Anthony. I've been one more day without buying any watches."
Yeah, yeah. I'm getting a medallion ready for him, you know, for him to get one in 12 months.
Yeah, I put my vision board up and it just had nothing on it. And it just reminds me that I'm not going to buy anything at all.
There you go, man.
No, yes. Good on you.
Yeah. Well, it's been interesting. So I'm enjoying it. But Pedro, let's get back to you. Have you still got your spreadsheet and how's it going? And what are you working towards at the moment in the watch space, if anything?
Well, yes, I still have my spreadsheet. As usual, I'm still saving a little bit here and there as usual. Well, right now I have one solid plan, which I hope it's going to happen sometime next year, you know, during the second semester. So I'm hoping I'll be able to get a Patek 5167.
Ooh.
So that's the idea. Nice. I've been waiting for this one for a while now. And I think we might make it happen next year sometime. So that's for sure. Well, I hope it's for sure it's going to happen. And then I have...
So that's the Aquanaut, right?
That's yes, the Aquanaut, that's the right? Yes. Yep. The stainless steel with rubber strap Aquanaut, yes. Again, it's a...
So what is it about that? What is it about it for you?
I've tried the watch probably during one Red Bar get-together about maybe 5 years ago. And I was completely in love when the moment I strapped the watch on my wrist. It's very comfortable. It's very sporty. It's very not Patek, I would say, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the entry door to the Patek world, in my opinion, while not giving up too much in regards to what Patek is known for. You know, to me, when I think about Patek, it's a brand with a complications brand that has a great, great history. And that's what I think about them, you know. And then when I see the Aquanaut, I see a very, at the same time, a very un-Patek watch, but at the same time, a very Patek watch because there is quality in there. It's a very subtle yet very, you know, striking watch in my view. And I think.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
Can I ask one question? Which, how much would you be willing to pay John Mayer for one of his unopened green grenade style Aquanaut straps? Do you know that? Because they don't make them anymore, do they?
I'd pay for him to keep it.
Yeah.
Well, we can do like a crowdfunding and just tell them not to open those packets.
Oh,
just burn them.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Leave one for the Patek Museum so they know not to do that color again, and that will be fine.
Well, I don't know if they make it or will make it anymore, but I know there are other brands out there, you know, that they make different colors. I think Matt is one who makes. I'm excited for that one, to be honest. It's a little outside of my realm, maybe, but it's one of the pieces that I always wanted to have in my collections. You know, I kind of feel like I have to have a Patek in my collection and a Rolex, and then everything else, I'll be okay with indies, you know. I mean, they're kind of indies in a way, right? But you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
But, I suppose, you know, from an outsider looking in at your collection, etc., when you have lusted after a watch for 5 years and you're still in love with it 5 years later and you don't have it, I think that's pretty good reason to pop it on the list and work towards that goal. You know, so many people like something, buy it instantly, and then never have that sort of that experience of wanting it and lusting over it and working towards it for so long. So you have my permission. I think you deserve it. Go and do it.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. No, I mean, if I have a look into my grails, they haven't changed almost at all in the last 5-6 years. You know, sometimes an opportunity just knocks on our door, and then you have to take it, you know, like,
yes.
That's how I felt about the Grönefeld. I had a chance to get one, and I was fortunate enough to get one. Ever since I saw one, you know, on Instagram, I felt in love. I mean, the finish, to be honest, is way better than Jorn. Of course, it's a different dynamic. It's a different watch, but their finish is just amazing. It can't compete with them, you know.
I haven't seen one yet. Roman, have you seen one in the flesh?
No, I don't
think there's too many kicking around.
Not around Australia. Maybe we don't hang out with the right people. I think that's probably the problem. But it's the Unpatek Patek, if you know what I mean. That's cool. Yeah. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that's for sure one that's happening, or at least I hope it's happening. And then I always have a wild card or several wild cards, meaning that if I can get really good price and the opportunity is correct, I would be willing to sacrifice some piece of my collection.
Yeah.
And yes, and that's basically what I have. I mean, with the current market situation scenario, you know, if I would come across a good Roman Gaultier or a MBNF, I would be willing to do more sacrifices and lean down my collection a little bit. Right now, it's a little out of my comfort zone. I have probably 20 watts right now. 20, 21 watts, something like that. So I'm due, you know, for a good consolidation, which I hope I don't need to do for the Aquanaut. So that would leave me more room for, you know, try to get another big independent. So if something happens and a Romain Gaultier shows up on my doorstep and I have to make a move, I would probably make a move right now. Although that would mean, you know, more sacrifices into the collection. But you get to a point that you look in your collection and you think about it. And I'm sure we all do that. And you think about it and you try to find a way you want to proceed with it. And you kind of get not lost, but you are indecisive in a way. You know, what do I need to do? How do I need to do? And I think maybe it's because, you know, expecting a kid and, you know, and doing a lot of stuff in the house for the kid and with everything that happened, you kind of get more conscious about it and you try to make your moves in a safer way. Whereas before, you know, you just would make a move, you know, just do it. And then you figure out how to do things later on. You know, of course, you know, as you know, in a very responsible way, or at least not very irresponsible way. But yeah, I kind of want that to happen. And at the same time, I kind of don't want that to happen. I feel like if I stay with my collection right now throughout the end of the year, just like you, Anthony, I would be good. Yeah. I'm very happy where I am right now. I'm very grateful. I have, I believe it's a beautiful collection. I like it. I already have one piece incoming in August, which is the Fulan Mari. I don't know how to pronounce it in the brand.
The Kickstarter one. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, that Kickstarter campaign. Yep, cool. That was there. That caused a big ripple, didn't it, when that came out?
Yes, it did. Yeah, it did. So I have that one incoming in August. And so if nothing else happens, I'm beyond grateful and happy already. But if we can pull something, you know, if we can make something happen, I will be down for it. But I don't know. We'll see.
Very good. It sounds like there's a lot of exciting stuff, which is always fun. But I do, last question before we get into the 6498. It's always fascinating to find out what people are doing on different parts of the world. So obviously with COVID, I just wanted to ask, you know, being that you are such a huge part of Red Bar Detroit and Red Bar in the States, just full stop. But what sort of things has Red Bar Detroit been doing to stay connected and stay sort of, well, I think just connected through COVID?
Yeah, we've done some Zoom sessions. I'll be honest, not everybody likes it, you know, and therefore we are not. I know a lot of Red Bars, they were doing Zoom sessions like every week. We probably have done like maybe four or five throughout this year and a half. We had one with Oris, another one with Bulgari. And maybe four others, just us talking, you know, And yeah, this has been it. I mean, we have Instagram, we have a Facebook group where we communicate almost on a daily basis. And this has been pretty much what we have been doing so far. But I'm excited because the guys will get together sometime, probably early June, for the first time in almost a year and a half. So it'll nice. Be exciting, you know, to be able to get the troops together. And yeah, it's probably going to be just a regular get together. But then for September, I'm almost 100% aligned with Hamilton to come to Detroit. So probably going to have an event with them. So that will be exciting as well. Yeah, so yeah, it's been tough times, you know, for everyone. And I particularly hate doing the Zoom sessions. I just, you know, it's just not the same. I understand that it's a remedy, but I just don't see the appeal, you know, very much of doing it.
No, we finally had a first just a sort of South Australian watch people get together. I think it was last week. And it was so nice to get back out. We had a nice dinner and just, you know, heaps of watchers, heaps of watch talk. And that was the first time since December 2019 that everyone had really got together again. So, it was so nice to do. But all right, well, I think we kind of touched on your collecting philosophies and you talked about how kid coming and things are changing and you. So we kind of don't need to go back down that road. So I think we'll move into the 6498 Unitas. And the reason why I wanted to talk about this was, you know, they're such amazing movements and they've been around for, you know, 70 years now and mainly unchanged as a base, but then exceptionally changed and modified by independent watchmakers and things like that. So I thought we'd just have a discussion around them and just shed a bit of light on them, talk a little bit about the stigmas, etc. So Roman, maybe we'll start with you. What watches sort of come to mind straight away to you when you think about the Unitas movement, either the 6497, which is the center seconds model, or the 6498 with the small sub-seconds? What comes to your mind first?
So the 6497, that's, people will recognize that's the one where usually the seconds displays at 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, 9 o'clock. Yeah, yeah.
Because they were developed from pocket watch movement. So that was like a Lapine style. So the center second, so the second subdial was opposite the crown. Mm-hmm. And then when they did the 6498 is when it was for a hunter case. A pocket watch where you'd push on the crown to pop open the front of the watch to read the time. So that's why they moved the sub-seconds to 6 o'clock. But when I think of 6497, 6498, I mean, everyone's used them. That's the thing. As we start talking about, essentially everyone, like I think from A to Z, whatever, you pick a brand with an A and pick a brand with, like, from Alpina to, I don't know, Zeno or Zenobasil or something, they'll all would have used it. The ones I always think of in the mass produced stuff, I always think of Panerai, like that kind of, you know, OP1 base logo kind of in my head, like the Panerai I could connect with, you know, kind of relatively inexpensive, built like a tank, you know, strapped to, you know, Sylvester Stallone's wrist in whatever that awful movie was. Daylight. Yeah. Sorry, this is not popcorn. I shouldn't talk about movies. We love Stallone, just not for his movies. So I think Panerai, for like a mass produced 6497. But in terms of indies, like if we go down this rabbit hole, which is a good one to go down, you know, we'll go Dawn Bluth. It's probably the next one I can think of.
Yeah.
Benzinger, you know, the guy who does skeletonization, beautifully decorated movements. I really like his work. I've got a watch of his. So, yeah. So maybe do you want to sort of split the discussion into kind of more mainstream brands versus indie, or do you want to just dive right into indies?
We'll just talk about the indies. I mean, the mainstream ones, you know, we kind of touched on the Panerai. I think the other one mainstream, although they're not really mainstream, they're a small company, Storva.
Storva Marines. That's right. They're kind of still indie in my head. Yeah, they're still indie.
Yeah, I think so too. And I've been there to the Black Forest in Germany, and it's very much just itself working with itself. And you know, they've got the cool little factory. They've got their beautiful museum there. And yeah, it's very much, I think, an indie brand. Well, what about you, Pedro? What comes to your mind? And then I'll talk about mine, and then we'll move into some of these other questions.
Okay. Well, I think when you talk about Unitas, be it either 6498 or 6497, there are just a few considerations that you have to think of. In my opinion, like a brand that used Unitas for such a long time, it has been Eberhardt with the Traversetolo watch, I think it's the name.
Yeah.
They were, in my head, they're one of the first ones to use Unitas. You know, followed by Panerai, like Roman said, Pen 111, 112. Then even Omega used Unitas through the Railmaster series with the Caliber 2211, which is basically 6498.
Yeah.
Then you have, you know, Zen have used Unitas, Glycine has used Unitas, Christopher Ward has used Unitas.
Yeah.
You know, Steinhardt. But then when you go to the good thing, the independence, the first, the top of mind to me is, of course, Lane. Torsti Lane has done amazing work with the 6498. I mean, if you have a look into the movement, if you don't think about it, you don't think it's a Unitas. I mean, he changed the bridges, he changes the finish, he does a lot of stuff into that watch. So that's, to me, the top of mind brand when it comes to Unitas. And then, of course, like Roman also said, Garrick. You have Keaton Myrick here from Oregon in the U.S., Dornbluff. I am going to butcher this name. Kittler watches?
Not sure of that one.
Yeah, not sure of that one.
K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R-S.
Kittilas.
Yeah, like they're new and upcoming brand. He does an amazing job with his watches, his finishes. To me, it reminds me of
Kettler's.
Kettler, yes.
Yeah.
You know, and then also another big indie, which I love, and I hope to own one day, Pascal Coyon.
Mm-hmm.
Now he has an in-house, but before that, he used to have a 6498 as well.
Yeah.
That was the one that I was going to say that comes to mind for me straight away.
Sorry, just quickly.
It's fine. I think I'm glad that he comes up in more than just what I say. But no, when I first saw that movement and how he changed the finger bridges and, you know, to do it even more so like pocket watches of the early 19th century, etc., I just, you know, the finishing he did and the price that came out at, I wish that there were more than 60 in the world. I know, Roman, you had the pleasure of owning one for some time. And, you know, just I think the thing that I love about this watch is, what I really like about the Unitas movement is, regardless of how modified it is, or even if it's just the basic one that Stolwer used, which is the sort of second highest level of finishing from the factory, is that they're so crunchy. And the ratchet sound that they make. And so you kind of really get this, this feeling of haut horology in a very much well-priced package. And I think that's really something special that I really like about them. But sorry, Pedro, keep going.
No, this is pretty much it. I mean, you know, Unitas, they became famous in a way because they're very reliable. The architecture is amazing for, you know, for anyone, any talented watchmaker to show their talents off and finish in a way he wants to. You have a very sturdy movement. I mean, you know, the first iteration, it's 18,000 vibrations per hour. So it's a very lazy vibration, but it's a very romantic one. And then, you know, you go to the second, to the updated ones, right? The 6497 and 98-2. Then you have different, you know, instead of having a cock, you have the pallet lever bridges, and it jumps from 18,000 to 21,600 vibrations per hour, which is, you know, more of a, I would say, mainstream vibration, I guess. I guess a lot of watchmakers, they use this one better than the 18,000. which seems to be more give more accuracy. But yeah, it's a movement on itself, which is very cheap to source. It's very reliable, and it's a sturdy movement. So I can understand why, you know, a lot of independents, they start off with that movement.
Yeah. And Roman, I suppose Pedro sort of summed it up there, but is there any more around why it's so popular, and, you know, why so many watchmakers use it?
Yeah, I mean, I think Pedro covered most of the points. The one kind of distinction I would probably make is, you know, when we say watchmakers use 6497, 6498, there is kind of global, there's broadly two ways watchmakers use them. Either, you know, you can either buy the movement itself, it's $300, you can buy it on eBay, or, you know, if you're buying it in wholesale, it'll be much cheaper than that. But you can take the whole movement, bang it into a watch, you know, and you're done. That's kind of the Panerai base logo, kind of, we don't do anything to it, we'll put our name on the back of the bridge and it's kind of good to go, as opposed to somebody like, you know, Pascal Caillon or Touristy Lane, you know, or, you know, Dirk Dornbluth, you know, where they actually essentially take the gear train and essentially redesign all the, you know, they use kind of the bones of the movement, but they discard a lot of the, you know, bridges to make their own bridges. So there's kind of, there's a finesse, there's varying degrees of finesse and, you know, use of the 6497. But as Pedro was saying, you know, it's readily available. Parts are always available. I believe it's the first movement that watchmakers train on. So everyone knows, like if anyone's moderately trained, everyone will know how to disassemble it, reassemble it, you know. It's sturdy, it's pretty strong, you know, it's designed at the time when it was, you know, when kind of flimsiness went away and kind of industrial strength was, you know, it was really the aim of the game. You know, I think these were sort of designed originally in the 50s, you know, yeah, when watches were actually, you know, like designed to last generations and actually, you know, take a beating. So yeah, so but it's a good platform for creativity, I think, because, you know, it's known, the proportions are known, the gear train dimensions are known, and then it's, yeah, I think it allows watchmakers a lot of creativity if they want to go there, you know, to redesign bridges and stuff like that. So yeah, that's why it's kind of, yeah, used a lot.
I wonder, because it's a big movement, right? It's 36.6 mil, I think I was reading before, but it's very rare. I don't think I've even seen a 40 mil watch. It seems like 41 is sort of where, oh no, there is a 41 is where it starts, because you've got 5 mil on the outsides. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, and Koyon did the 41, he did the 42 as well. And I'm actually interested to, you know, I wonder why no one's really sort of tried to make it smaller, because I even think of Cameron Weiss in Los Angeles with Weiss Watches. You know, he makes his caliber, I think it's 1003 or something. He makes everything in-house, but it's clearly based off the architecture of this movement. But again, like 41 is the smallest that it goes. And I'm thinking, this guy's making it himself. Why aren't you making it smaller? So there must be some sort of reason, like you must get a massive drop in power reserve, or I don't know. I really don't know. But it'd be interesting to find out why that is the case. But I suppose 41 mil is so universal, though. It's kind of, it fits most ends of the earth for watch people.
And
there are smaller base calibers as well. Like there are other base calibers that are smaller. So I think it's one of those things where, you know, one of the advantages of just going to a 6498 is you don't need to think or really do much to it. You know, you can take it apart, but the gear train proportions are all set. So that's possibly why.
Do you think there's much stigma, Roman? I know you wanted to touch on this. So for as long as I can remember, whenever I saw the 6498, I never had, even though it's produced by ETA and it is a very much a base caliber with basic sort of movement qualities, but I always enjoyed that movement, and I always thought of it as a great movement. And if I bought a watch with the 6498, and I'd be extremely happy. But do you think there's much stigma out there?
It's one of those things where I think It's an easy blog post to write if you don't know much, if you don't know anything about watches. You know, it's one of those, it's not in-house. You know, like, it's a very easy thing to make, a comment. It's an easy uninformed comment to make. I mean, and we've talked on this podcast before about, you know, the in-house thing and where, you know, how important it is and all of that kind of stuff. The way I've reframed my own thinking about it is I've looked at my collection, and at one point I had about 6 Unitas movements all in at the same time, and I can list them because I've got them written down. And they were all different. And when I looked them, and you know, when the beauty of it, what really kind of rearranged my own thinking to some degree is when I turned them all over and I looked at how different each of them looks and how much love and care actually went into each of those 6497. It almost, like, whatever they started with, it doesn't matter because they put so much work into it. You know, it became its own thing. It's a bit like, you know, I don't look at cars and go, oh, I wonder where all the axles come from. You know, like, you're just going to go, well, they've built this beautiful body around it. So it's a good palette to express creativity. So, like, so to me, I don't have a hang up about it. You know, I want to see what the watchmaker has done. Or if there's not much work, then I would expect the price to be commensurate. You know, so the thing is, like, if it's a Panerai base logo, you know, in my head, I know roughly what that should be. And I think that's where sometimes more inexperienced collectors get burned. Is, you know, they buy something, they pay, you know, 12 grand for something that's an undecorated, you know, $300 movement. That leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But if somebody, you know, if like a Pascal Caillon does a Chronometra edition that he put heart and soul into it, like, it's worth way more than what he charged for it, because he just puts, there's so much work in there. Then the fact that it started off as a 6498, doesn't matter, but, you know, do you know what I mean? So
absolutely,
you know, that's my thing.
You can see so much of the footage of him milling the base plate, and he completely redesigned. I think the only things that he's really left is the balance, the barrels, and sort of the gear train. The rest is all done by him in his little workshop and hand finished. It's just unbelievable for that price. And to back up what you said there, Roman, I think this is where I enjoy Stolver so much, is because they're not trying to be anything that they're not, and they're using these movements, and they charge I think they are one of the best value watches that you can buy, especially for the sort of sub 2,000 Australian dollar mark, you know, before you start getting into Tudor and other things, but it's a different kind of watch. Stolver just really sit in so well in that market. And I mean, I'm sure Laco is the same. And I think it's kind of like Rolex and Omega. You're either Stolver or Laco, and I'm definitely Stolver. There's some things about the Laco that just don't sit well with me, just from aesthetics, that's all. But Stolver does a great job, I think. Pedro, what about you?
Well, I don't see a problem, like Roman said. This in-house thing is very, it's something new from the last few years, actually, where a lot of brands, they were upcharging for outsourced movements, and then they had to find a way to justify their prices. And then that's when you had the resurgence of the in-house. You know, Unitas, 200 years from now, any watchmaker still alive will be able to service. And that's one of the beauties of it. You know, it's a very easy, very straightforward movement to work with. You know, pieces are super easy to get. So it's one of those things that is really, it's a winning combo. There's no other way around, to be honest. And the creativity around it, it's just amazing. I mean, like you guys said, to me, the guy who comes to mind is Torsti with everything he does. A lot of the modifications he does, and you know, it's just amazing everything that these guys do with a very simple movement. And also, the Unitas, they sell their pieces also for other brands to stack modules on top of it. For example, I've known some brands they stack a chronograph module on top of a Unitas, you know, and they have a chronograph movement all of a sudden. So that's very common as well. Very, very common in
that. I think even Montblanc used them in the sort of vintage-inspired world watches. I can't remember what the caliber was last year, but I remember trying one on at, I think it was Monarchs in Melbourne, not last year, the year before. And even them, they looked cool as well. And they were priced pretty well for what they were. I think they're about $4,000 or something, which is probably just a bit too much. But face it, you're probably not going to pay retail for that anyway. You're going to get a nice discount. But yeah, I think they did good. And what about clones? I don't know much about this. I don't know about you, gents. But are there any watches or brands that come to mind that are using sort of clones or so close to the Unitas movements? Roman, do you know of any? Pedro was going to go. Yeah, you go,
maybe
mate.
Go to Pedro first. It's not really like usually Unitas in my the brands I pay attention to. Unitas is so cheap relatively to what they do. Yeah. You know, there's no need for them to resort to clones. But I'm sure there's a whole bunch of Asian, you know, manufacturing facilities that do it. But Pedro might be more informed than me on that.
Yeah, top of mind, what I think is Seagull.
Yeah.
Yes. Of course,
they make their own version.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So that's one of that comes to my mind, like right off the bat, as far as clone goes. And then you have probably a whole bunch of inspirational ones, like I believe Dornbluth calibers, they're very inspired in the Unitas movement, like you said, Vice as well. But clones, as far as I remember, at least one for sure is Seagull. And I think one point that's very important as well, Unitas has not always been an ETA company, right? Unitas was an independent movement maker and supplier. And then when the quartz crisis happened, that's when Swatch ERA ended up buying, you know, Unitas. They bought Venus, Valju, a whole bunch of, you know, these small brands, because otherwise they would be all gone by now.
Mm. Yeah. Even Longines, I think it's the caliber L512, which we can see, I think, maybe not so much these days, but back, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, they were using these movements as well, which I think it's a credit to the industry. It's kind of like the ETA 2824, where it's kind of the, if you've made something that everyone can use and be reasonably happy with it, and customers are going to buy it, and you can do some customizations, it's kind of like the, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think they've really just nailed it with this one for a manually wound movement that's got a fairly decent power reserve. Can be serviced everywhere, and I think that's just why it's just done so well. And most brands that use it do a great job with it, which is cool, I think. Well, anything else, gentlemen, on the ETAs and the Unitas 6498? Anything, any other watches you want to throw in there, or any other statistics you found out?
No, the only thing I would say is, and that's kind of more message to the industry, is, you know, lose the perceived stigma. Just be honest about what you use and price your watches accordingly. Because there's absolutely nothing wrong with, you know, there are lots of creative watchmakers using Unitas to express themselves and do, you know, make their own stuff. Just be honest, be open, price them accordingly, and it's absolutely fine. There's no need to, you know, no need to rename a caliber with your name, you know, in the kind of with the cloak of we make it ourselves, but it's actually a supplied movement. So, but there's a whole bunch of, you know, like that really annoys me. But there's a whole bunch of kind of honorable mentions we can do, you know, about particularly indie makers who use, you know, who use Unitas. You know, Torsti Lane was covered already. Dawnblue stuff is great. Garrick, definitely worth it. Checking out Benzinger, I would be strong. Like, you know, I think it'd be worth talking about. You know, there's a whole subgenre of watchmakers who use the Unitas movement to do some really cool engraving and skeletonization and things like that. And Johann Benzinger has been doing that, you know, since the mid 2000s. Maybe even early 2000s, and he does like incredible work for not a lot of money, relatively speaking. For and you, like if you look at what he can do with a Unitas versus a what he starts with, and he says you wouldn't be able to, you know, mix and match them together. So it's definitely worth covering that. Another brand I'll kind of throw in there, which is worth kind of people checking out, is Turby watches. I'm not sure if you guys know about Turby watches.
I had it on my list. Yeah.
Oh, you had it. Okay. Yeah. Well, then I'll let Pedro talk then, because I think I've already monologued enough.
You can talk about them. Good. You are good. No, yeah, Turby. They have beautiful watches as well. Really well done. They put a little less effort in the finish. It looks like it, but at the same time, their price is just right. Where they should be, in my opinion.
Agree.
Yeah. And I think
there's some really nice engraving. Yeah. So really nice engraving with them. And I think one thing that they kind of nail is they've got a few different types of watches, but they're really, you know, that sort of mid 30s Omega sector dial that was very much Longines and Patek and all of them. Mm-hmm. They do a really good job at recreating that with that movement, which I think that's pretty cool. I'm not too sure on the prices of these, but I'm sure they're reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they start about 2,000 euros and go up depending on what you want. Yeah, but it's still very reasonable there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing, I love the fact that these watchmakers, they have the opportunity to use these movements, because they do such an amazing job and they really charge you a very fair price. And that goes to show a lot of folks getting into the hobby of the watch collecting, that there's so much out there for you to look. You just have to look, actually. You know, you just don't need to follow just the hype and the media. But if you do a little bit of research, if you talk to some watch collectors, you know, and that have been doing this for some time now, and nowadays it's so easy with Instagram and Facebook groups and now Slack. So it's so easy for you to get that information and go after. And I'm sure you'll find something that's going to fit your taste. You know, that's for sure. And one more thing, when Roman said about, doing skeletonized movements, one brand that came to mind that's not very well known is called Molnar Fabry. It's a watchmaker from Slovakia.
Good one.
Good one. Outstanding job. I mean, their watches are amazing. It's really worth to check.
So how do you say that?
Molnar Fabry. Molnar Fabry.
Yeah.
So beautiful, cool. Beautiful watches.
Yeah. This sort of genre, if you will, or just the way that this movement has really, really seriously impacted the independents and the smaller brands to be able to do stuff. And I think that's one thing to call out is the sheer volume of different watches that this movement has been able to allow people to create, I think is something super cool, very much so like the 2824 as well. But just the fact that there are so many out there that you could literally have a collection of these watches and have not one watch look the same, but yet they've all got the same base movement or even movement. So, yeah, interesting. Very cool. Well, hopefully for people listening, that was somewhat educational and you can learn a little bit more and go do a bit more research on some of the brands that I'll try and list them in the show notes as best as I can. But go check them out, go have a look, and hopefully you end up with one in your collection, because you will not be disappointed with this kind of movement. It's just awesome. Finally, anything else that anyone wants to get off their chest or talk about with this topic before we move to Instagram recommendations?
So I'll throw a curveball, real quick one. What is your pet peeve in regards to the Unitas movement?
My pet what, sorry?
Your pet peeve, about the Unitas movement.
Oh, pet peeve. Oh, that's size. A good question.
It's got to be size.
Size, yeah, Roman size.
Yeah, I mean, size or lazy case design for people who use Unitas. You know, because there's a lot of watchmakers who use the Unitas movements. They do a great job. And then it's just a bog standard movement. And then they get a bog standard case, which is 42 mil really flat, with really long lugs, and it just sits, at least on my wrist, it just sits really, really large on some. Yeah. I've seen them done really well. Like Pascal Caillon did a great job with his, you know, with the case was sort of more tapered at the ends. It actually wrapped around the wrist really well. So yeah, my pet peeve would be size, really the only thing. But on the other hand, the advantage of size is you got a really big dial, you got a really big movement, so you get to see that decoration done really well. You know, you get a lot of eye candy on your wrist.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's true.
I
think for me, it would be the size as well. I think, and that's kind of, but once you get used to 41 plus, it's kind of okay. And I agree, you get a lot of watch to look at when it's like that. And if it's done really well, you want a lot to look at because you don't always need a loop to appreciate it. Sorry, back to you, Pedro.
Yeah, I was going to say, what about you, Pedro?
Well, I don't see it as a pet peeve, but something that I wish they would be able to increase and improve would be the power reserve. And I know they did in the second generation from 48-ish, 44 hours to 56, more or less. But when you have a collection bigger than three watches, if you had a longer power reserve, it would be beneficial just because you don't get to wear that watch every day. But at the same time, I love it because it's a very romantic thing that you go every morning or every evening before going to bed and you wind that watch and you hear that click. So at the same time, it's a minuses. It's a big plus to me, you know, because having that intimate connection with your watch is great. But at the same time, when you don't wear it for 2 days, you know, almost 3 days, you gotta do all over again. So it's kind of a pet peeve to a point to me.
Yeah, I agree. Well said. Good question too. All right, I think we'll wrap it up there, and we'll go to our Instagram recommendations. So maybe I'll start. I'll go first. So today mine is With a Journey. So WITHAJOURNEY, With a Journey. So a small account, and the reason I picked this account is because he has. I think he's got impeccable taste in watches that really suit the brands that I like as well. And he has a lane, which is fantastic. So that's kind of the link to today's episode. But, I mean, there's Peter Speak Marine. There's all sorts of interesting stuff from JLC Reversos.
Great collection.
I just think...
Really nice collection. Really
cool
really
taste.
Nice. Yeah. Shopard, that... 1860.
The Shopard, that is just, I mean, Roman knows I love that watch. Yep. I think it's just fat. It's an unbelievable watch for the money. And already, if you haven't got
stop
one
talking
yet,
about them. They're hard I to know. Find already. Stop yeah, talking about them. They're terrible, terrible watches. Boat. Don't buy them. Buy the Unitas 6498. The Shopard is rubbish. Rubbish.
Oh, dear. So, yeah, what with our journey is mine. He's got a couple of hundred followers.
Great.
But I just think if you like watches and watches off the beaten track, I think you'll enjoy his
Yeah, that's
his
a great
profile.
Account.
So,
fantastic recommendation.
So that's mine. Roman, what about you?
I've got somebody called Dr.SkinnyWrist. So Dr.SkinnyWrist. Also surprising.
Great guy.
Yeah. Oh, do you know him, Pedro? Because so the medical doctor with love of indies, really cool collection. So he's got, you know, Shopek, he's got Urwerk, Ludwig Balois. There's a Moser there just for you, Anthony.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, I do my prep. Just really, really cool collection of indie pieces. Not a lot of posts, but also not a lot of followers, which is really surprising because he takes really nice pictures of really cool watches. That he got. So,
And may I say, very humble, approachable guy, and a super great guy to talk as well.
Ah, cool. No, fantastic. Yeah. So that's even better when they're like that. So that's me.
Very
what about
good.
You, Pedro?
Good one.
Well, you know, just like the last time, I kind of forgot this segment and I didn't prepare ahead, which is a shame. I should have known better since it's my second podcast with you guys. But that's just probably just me.
That's all right.
Having said that, you know, there's so many amazing accounts, so many amazing people in the watch fam, and I probably I don't want to repeat myself here because I've said multiple times. And having said that, I'm going to go with one guy that is really a great guy, very humble, very approachable. And I've been talking to him quite a lot. And he's from Detroit as well. So I got to give a shout out to Detroit, right? And he's what I consider the king of the indies. I mean, he has almost everything indie-wise, and it's just amazing. Awesome. His Instagram handle
What's his
is
name?
Shani.watch. S-H-A-N-I.watch.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
Smith.
Yep.
Crikey.
Smith is just the Roger beginning. Smith. You keep scrolling.
He has 806. He has
everything. Yeah,
a lot of yarns. I mean, he is probably one of the biggest yarn collectors in the U.S. He has so much stuff, man.
Yeah,
so Cruvia
is just everything. Yeah, no, he's the king. He's the king.
Yeah, he's and a super great guy. I was able to meet him probably 2 years ago in a yarn collectors dinner here in Detroit, and we've talked for hours. And he was wearing Jorn Tourbillon with the platinum, full platinum, the green dial, the green stone dial. I forgot the name of the stone now.
Wow.
Jesus, I can't remember. Let's but see. He has a green dial. Oh, jade. The jade. Oh, the Tourbillon jade.
Yeah.
Yeah, full platinum. He just gave it to me. Try it on. Go out in the sun. See how the dial is and everything. So super great guy. I mean, amazing collection. So he's one of these guys that you look and say, yes, one day if I get like a third of it, and yes. I'll be very, very happy, and I'm sure I'll be very successful as well.
And, that's it.
There's some rare watches here.
Yeah, and he has something that's amazing. He has a book, so every time he goes to collect a watch, he gets the signature and a message from the watchmaker.
Oh, that's so awesome.
So he has Roger Smith. Cool. He has a Crivias, he has Philippe Dufour, he has Jorns, he has... So it's a whole new level of collectability.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's nice. Wow.
Super cool.
Cool. Yeah, he's a hero.
Good one. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. That was a lot of fun. Roman, as always, thank you for coming and joining me for these chats. I always enjoy this kind of conversation because you learn stuff as well, and it's always a lot of fun, so thank you.
Oh, thanks for the invite. It's been awesome.
Very good. Pedro, always great to have you back onto the podcast, and please know you're always welcome. I always love your opinions and the way that you're quite articulate about the way you do things, and it's always nice to hear someone that's sort of got a plan, sticks to the plan and executes. So thank you so much for coming back onto the podcast. I hope you enjoyed yourself today.
Yeah, this was a pleasure. That was a blast, man. I was very happy in doing it, very excited, and I'm looking forward to the next one. And I like what you guys are doing. Keep doing it, and rise of the Indies, man. Let's make sure people know about
power
it.
Power to that.
You know, get off the hype trap and have some fun.
Oh, dear. Yes, I agree. So for those listening, if you want to get involved with our Slack group, actually, Pedro just became a member of the Slack group. So welcome officially to the Slack group. As you can see, Pedro, what was your first impressions when you got in there?
Love it. I was concerned because I never used Slack before. So
that's
you know,
not a bad idea. We still don't know how to use it. That's fine. Totally fine.
That was very reassuring message when I hear from you guys saying that you guys been a year in and we still don't know how to use it. So I'm good with that. But yeah, I love it. You know, talking watches with a bunch of guys and gals. It's me, man, all over. And I love that. It's a very casual atmosphere. So we just talk, show your thing, and you know, got your opinions, learn. That's all about the community. I love it. Thanks for having me there.
Yeah. Ah, no worries at all. So if you're like Pedro and you want to join our Slack group, just reach out to me, anthony@fitthrist.com, or just Instagram, any of the Fitthrist guys, and we'll get you in there. And as I said, it's a lot of fun because we have off topic, we've got watches, we've got podcasts, we've got whatever you want to talk about, industry news, it's all there. So come and join us whenever you're ready, and we'll get you in there. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your days. Evening for you, Pedro. Just getting lunchtime for us, Roman. So we've got a weekend ahead of us.
Totally.
But thank you so much again. And for everyone else, stay on time.